Hello, and welcome to Educational Triage, where we discuss issues in alternative education. This is a discussion about teaching by teachers, for teachers, and others who are interested in the alternative education world. We hope you find today's episode relevant, engaging, and useful. And if you do, please subscribe. I'm Tony Hunt, and I'm here to help guide you with the help of my friends Christy and Philip.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tony Hunt, and I am joined with my good friends Christy Goodell and Philip Summers. And just to launch us off on this inaugural episode, Christy, why don't you give everybody a little taste of who you are?
Okay. Yes. Hello. My name is Christy Goodell, and I am currently a learning specialist in a special ed department at our local high school. I also have been teaching there for about 13, 14 years, but I've been teaching and have educational experience for well over 20, which is kind of amazing since I don't think I'm that old, but my background is all over the place. I have taught at deaf schools. I've taught in vocational programs. I've taught American Sign Language at several high schools where American Sign Language or ASL is considered a world language, and you also earn vocational credit. So I've kind of got some background in that arena. I've also worked at a Montessori school. I've worked at a middle school. I've kind of been in like almost the entire range from like pre-K to 12 in my teaching career. And then I also, from the parent perspective, I have two boys. One is a sophomore in high school and one is starting college. So I have kind of both sides of the lens, so to speak, with in terms of education. So I'm super happy to be here.
Great. Thank you. Philip?
Hi, I'm Philip Summers. I've been teaching 26 years. Did a lot of alternative ed, grades 8 through 12. Mostly grades 11, 12 with some college preparatory work. I've worked also with kids with dyslexia. I've worked with middle school kids. I have a Black Studies degree and a Social Studies bachelor's with a master's in teaching. But because of the alternative ed experience, I've done a lot of teaching all over, from language arts to health and to PE and lots of other areas. Done a lot of collaborative work. And right now I'm a guest teacher in Southwest Washington and the west end of the Columbia River Gorge.
Great. Thank you. My name is Tony Hunt, and I have nearly 40 years of teaching experience from pre-K through college, actually. And I've taught workshops. I've taught almost every single subject that there is, except for things like physics and chemistry, which are beyond my scope, and anything above algebra 1 or geometry. And I've been in the practice of alternative education for nearly 30 years. So we have a bit of diversity in here, and we also have all been working with alternative ed in different venues as well. So today, what we would like to talk about are, if you had one thing that you could tell people about alternative ed or what you believe that people need to understand about alternative ed, what would you tell them? And I want to start off by reading this quick, well, I don't know how quick it is, but it's a blog post by Chase Mielke, and it's called "We Have a Problem with Alternative Education, and We Need to Talk About It." Educate every child. That is the audacious aim of American education. Sometimes I marvel at our commitment to that aim. Other times, that pursuit seems overwhelming, given the diverse learners in any and every classroom. But no matter how daunting the task, we go into education wanting every child to succeed. Or do we sometimes forget that goal? Lightly, I've been troubled by an observation that we have a problem with alternative ed in this country. Sometimes we treat alternative schools, programs, and the students in them as lesser than. Unfortunately, I've seen this firsthand. I've heard and read comments alluding to alternative education as a waste of time. Other comments take on an air of good riddance to those troublemakers. At a staff meeting, one comment jokingly compared alternative students to future convicts. Alternative schools maintain our commitment to educate every child, but sometimes we degrade rather than commend them. Alternative students are resilient learners who don't give up, but sometimes we treat them as failures. Last year, sparked by what I was hearing about alternative schools, I took another visit to our district's alternative high school. I listened to students' stories, their frustrations and hopes. I sat with passionate alternative education teachers about the work they do. What these students and educators wanted was for all of us to shift our views, to see alternative students as unique, determined people, to see alternative education as an incredible option for those who don't fit our traditional approaches. Okay. There's some sombering words in there.
Oh, but so true.
It
That's
is.
That is a good jumping off point for sure.
I think what he highlights is, and this is something that's stuck in my craw for quite some time, is that I was speaking with my coworker this last year, and I said, what is it? What is it about our program and outside of our doors? What is it? And they looked at me and said, we're garbage men. They look at us as garbage men. We're here to clean up the trash. They create the trash, they create the mess, and then they expect us to clean it up. And nobody wants to deal with the garbage man. And I thought to myself, you know, there's some truth in that, but it's, I don't know. I can't think of myself that way because that demeans the students.
Stigma. Right. Stigma.
Yeah.
We do subconsciously accept that stigma. I've seen, you know, ex-students put down on social media profiles that they graduated from the main high school when I was teaching a program that wasn't on the site of the main high school. It just was affiliated with it. And they were actually part of the program itself. And so they were in a sort of a denial. Well, you know, I'll let the world think I graduated from X high school. But, you know, what they really did was graduated from our program. Things like that. But there's also what the Navy SEALs would say is embracing the suck. These kids also, we know them to do that. We know these extraordinary individuals that embrace the suck. I mean, we're talking about 15-year-old parents and, you know, kids who are getting away from gang affiliation or trying to learn to live on their own and not like stay home to take care of younger siblings. You know, these are things that are big and hairy and awful that they have to deal with as kids. And so they're hard to overcome. And we see these extraordinary stories unfold before us, which is this well-kept secret. And so there's that other side of that coin, but there's that stigma too, you know, or that's, we're the dump, we're the garbage.
But we have,
but
I don't know how it is in other buildings, but in all the buildings that I've worked in, there have been these people who I'm going to say that they believe that they are the glitterati, that they are the elite, and they believe that they know better. And that they have the answers to everything. And if those kids aren't towing the line for them, and if those kids aren't, if they're not getting what they do, because they say, look, I've done almost everything possible that I can, or I have done everything, and I'm breaking my back out there, and they're still not getting it. And just, you know, they're not showing up, they're not paying attention, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, they deserve to go down there and or to that program or whatever. And or they say, oh, I'm so glad that they got in there. Well, that's because we took them off of your hands, right? So they look down on the kids.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll check in on them and they'll say, how are they doing? And part of that is, am I going to see them back in my class again?
Well, they're bad inventory. You know, they're a bad product. If we're producing a good product here, tests, and test scores measure productivity. You know, you can't, like if we have a factory model, we're producing a product. And this product has to conform to these standards. And these products / students are never going to conform to these standards. And they are a bugaboo. They're a mess. They make things work not so wonderful. And so they're not good inventory. And what do you do with good inventory or bad inventory? You get it out. You get it the heck out of here. But we're not a factory. We're a school. We can't junk bad inventory because they're kids. And we get those kids and we know that they're not bad inventory. And then we create an environment, hopefully, that works. And then we see them do these wonderful things. Yeah. But they don't see it because they're working in a factory.
Right. Because Alt-Ed, for many, both in and out of education, Alt-Ed is viewed as a less than. It is... Yeah. If you can't make it in the traditional gen ed system, then you need to go to into the factory. So you must not be smart enough or you must not be trying hard enough. So we're going to put you in this other spot, the alternative, right? It just already has a stigma, like you said, Philip, of being a less than program, not an equivalent program.
Yeah, and it's not the traditional path, you know.
Right. And if the kid's not cutting it in my, you know, my history class, they're not engaged in World War II unit, and World War II is fascinating. So it must be them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, not everyone is engrossed in World War II. So maybe it's not the student, you know.
I knew a student who audited high school classes. She was taking them and she took three of them and all the teachers came to her and said, listen, you know, you're failing my classes. She says, I don't care. I don't need the credit. I just wanted to take the content. She had it all figured out. There was no alternative program by which to get anything else. And so she said, if it's okay with you, I'll just sit and get the content and not take the test and take the F. Because she wasn't going to go to college. She just wanted the content. She liked to learn.
Which is like really
it was weird. You audited a high school class? It's like, okay. Well, there was no system for it, but she did it anyway.
She did it.
So the question then, once she told the instructor that, was there any response from the instructor? For example, what have you learned?
No. You know?
I mean, there was
no assessment.
Was there an assessment from the instructor?
No. No, because there was no reason for an assessment because there was no grade other than an F. My daughter refused the traditional assessment.
Well, there you go.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And therefore,
there was
no grade given.
Well, then there's also, they say, you know, we treat every student the same, and yet, where you expect every student to be able to climb a tree. Can a fish can't climb a tree.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's that famous quote we always go back
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
We always go back to that. But the problem is, okay, so what have you done for the fish in your class? But better yet, why are you asking them to also fly? Because elephants can't climb trees either, and they can't fly.
Yeah.
But you have some that can fly. You have some that can slither. You have some that can walk on that are bipedal. You have some that are quadrupeds. You have some that can swim and walk. So how are you taking care of every single one of those in order to achieve success? Because you're not successful unless every student has had an opportunity that allows them to succeed and achieve a goal. Yeah.
To be fair, though, and we all understand this, students do have things in common that they all do. They do it at different levels, but you can get them to hum in the same pitch, at least on something. And so when you can find that, you can find some commonality, at least
Right.
That's the score. So you can, at least, I know what you're saying, though. You get a room full of six different abilities at different levels, and it's very, very difficult to coordinate those into a lesson. Mm-hmm. But then again, isn't that what we face when we step outside the schoolhouse doors anyhow?
What's that?
Well, everyone's got different abilities.
Yeah, we're not all in grade five. I mean, you know, all teachers, all 20-year teachers over there, you're all teaching 20-year students, or I don't know. You know what I'm saying? All 20-year teachers teach in the same grade, you know, that sort of thing. It's like life, you're out there, it's like, hi, welcome to the world. Get going. I heard this phrase, why is life lived forward, but we assess it backward?
Oh,
I like that.
Yeah, you know, that's, I hadn't heard that one.
It's not mine.
That's a good one.
A philosopher said it's a Kierkegaard now, thing, I think. Or so. Sorry. But,
The one thing that I want to point out as well, and it kind of goes along with what you've been saying, because I have to grab these thoughts as they bounce into my brain, otherwise they're gone. Talk about ADD. is why are we finding more and more alternative programs trying to conform to mainstream education? For example, they're trying to take the relationship components out, and the fact that we can modify, that we differentiate, that we're able to get kids to do things, and that we're able to manipulate what we have for each student to match, let's call them the type of animal that they are, whether they're aquatic, whether or not they're aviary, or whatever they are. Why are we putting them all, why are we doing this whole thing on computers and telling them that this is the way that they're going to learn? And which is another kick in the teeth to alternative education, because basically what it says is, we can have a classified person run this class. We just need to have one person who can actually be a teacher of record in order to go with this.
Right.
And so
is not a robot.
No. In fact, most of the breakthroughs in mainstream education came from the halls of alternative education. And
of course,
the other thing, and I heard this on, I believe it was on the Education Revolution podcast, where they said, why are we still doing the same kind of school even after COVID? And everybody wants to return to normal, which is the kind of system that wasn't working for a chunk of our kids before COVID. And then people were freaking out because they were trying to manipulate it so that they could force it during COVID. And now that we're after COVID, are they still going to try to force that on the kids and go back to that kind of quote unquote normalcy?
I think the answer is that that's what a lot of people want. They want the familiarity and the comfort, I think, of life pre-COVID. And so here's this little thing that's now completely different. And so I think like that's a huge kind of systemic and emotional question, right? Like, I want to go back to the way it was before all this awfulness that's affected every part of our lives. But
I think there's a lot to that. Yeah.
Yeah. But the hard part is that they want, you know, and that kind of goes back to that trauma-informed care that we've been learning a lot about. Like, you know, we thrive on predictability, right? So that stuff that I know what's coming. So then therefore I'm ready for the stuff that is unpredictable. If everything's unpredictable, then I'm always escalated and not regulated, right? So it's hard to manage. But then if you kind of look at like, what did you really like about the school pre-COVID? Was it because they did what they were told, and they would, you know, move to a bell and you would sit and take notes and you'd get good grades and you raised your hand at the right time? Because that is just, you know, you liked compliance.
I think it's important to note that they wanted the familiarity. That struck me, and you put it so well, and the kids wanted it back too. But for those that didn't want it, there was no system for them at all. There was no alternative, literally outside of the alternative education system that was already in place within the schools. So there was no grassroots movement to come up with like schoolrooms. First off, the mandate said you couldn't meet people. And so it was really hard to finagle right. that. And then when it came together, there was an acceptable sort of substitute. And then when they started to go back to school, the kids kind of went with it. Now we're sitting in a place where some kids just don't want to go along with it, but there's no acceptable larger scale alternative to the way it's been for, you know, how long? A century plus,
right.
you know.
Right.
And yeah. So we haven't moved past that model in our heads. The model that, you know, being between two worlds, you know, looking back, it no longer looks at all suitable. Testing a human being to find out where their capabilities are at the age of 15 is absolutely ludicrous.
Right. And
it makes no sense.
We're at a point where we could tear some of the foundations away, right? Like we're at this really yeah. great point, mm-hmm. aside from all the scariness of like, you know, the health concerns, right? Which are awful and we don't yeah. know and we can't control it. But we have an opportunity that, hey, when we come back, they don't have to all sit in a room for 90 minutes with their desks facing forward and taking right. notes mm-hmm. in a spiral. Like we don't need to go back to that. Yes, that worked for some if they were auditory learners that were compliant, but we had a lot of kids, actually a lot, that did well with like, hey, I can do work for a little chunk of time and then I can come back when I'm ready and I can mm-hmm. pause a video and be able to repeat it. And I can I don't have to sit in a desk. I can stand or lay down or sit on a yoga ball, you know, and they have all these different ways. So that was, I think we should be able to embrace that and it shouldn't be considered the alternate. I wish there was
or
a better way.
Expand the hours,
right?
You know, let kids drop in. Some kids don't want to, you know, go 5 days a week. You know, there were in mm-hmm. the school I was working in full time with elementary school kids. They had the high schoolers dropping in 3 days a week and the middle schoolers twice a week. And they were later hours. So that's a different type of model. You know, why can't it stay like that? Or why can't they meet outside of school 2 other days a week? This middle school is perhaps doing experiential work. That sort of thing, you know, these things right. can be accommodated, you know, and expanded, you know, if you think in different ways, but everyone's sort of anxious to get things back to normal, as you say.
Right.
And I think
right.
we shall
do it
if we're not careful.
Right. We can reinvent some things. I think even Tony, we had discussions a long time ago about like, we have so many kids who are working and some mm-hmm. are choosing to, but a lot of them have to. They are part of the family income and they have to work. And so if there's a way that they could do a shift.
Evening school.
Yeah. And then you have evening school and yeah. it's again, not seen as like, well, you didn't cut the mustard. So now you're in the afternoon program. But like, hey, we recognize that there are a lot of people who are working, especially for our juniors and seniors, that mm-hmm. you need to work for whatever reason. And so we're going to not only give you credit for that, which I think a lot of our schools do, we give you work experience, but we will arrange it so you're not missing the other parts of your education. So it's not a hindrance to you. Like we should be able to embrace that at the high school level.
Right? I have actually
dream the dream.
Call somebody's boss and say, you have to allow so-and-so to come to school for a couple of these days. I have to have them come and do this work. I really do. I consider this to be very important to them. And we came to a compromise.
Right.
I have to go to bat for yeah. them because it is important. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. so many times I've had to either talk to the parent. And yes, same. I've called, you know, insert fast food restaurant name here, where I'm like, you cannot start this kid's shift at 3. He is still in school. So we need to either figure out a way to, does he need a fourth block release so that he can then leave? And, you know, we just have to be mindful. Can we schedule his classes in the morning so he can work that 3 to close shift or whatever he's choosing to do? But, you know, part of it is that if you are employing a 16, 17, 18-year-old, you also need to recognize that your shifts.
Right. But I think that there are times that parents and businesses both consider school almost a daycare. that they can pull out of, and that it's not all that necessary.
Yes.
And I hate to use that analogy, but it's very, very true.
It's very true.
I was thinking that, and I think,
and I think teachers were so relieved that parents were finally understanding what it was that they put up with when they had the kids were at home and they had to be homeschooled. But, you know, not going so far off the mark, I think we need to work with businesses, because what skills are the kids learning at the business? And it shouldn't just be job experience. There should be something else that they can be getting besides job experience. Can they get marketing experience? Can they get sales? These are life skills that the kids are getting.
Oh, for sure.
And if, you know, what if we attached some kind of thing that we could do with that, where each student had to write a manual that describes what it is that they do, so they could do, they learn technical writing.
Mm-hmm.
And because you need to be able to write. And that is the one, communication and writing, not necessarily speaking, but writing is one of the most important skills that anybody is going to learn. Speaking is actually very, very important as well. But if I'm going to go, let's say, okay, I worked as the chief operations officer for a fish brokerage. And if somebody said, what is it that you did? And I wrote down and I created a manual of all the things that I had to do, from waking people up in the morning to sometimes cooking all the meals to working with all the fishermen, sometimes having to jump ship so that I could be on their boats and picking nets. Of course, I made a lot of money doing that too, off the side. And then I came back on board, and then I'm paying the fishermen, I'm weighing the stuff, I'm working in the processing room, all this stuff, running groups. You know, there's just so much stuff to be done. So what other kinds of learning was I getting from that? Could I put in PE with that? Probably. So there goes my physical education, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could I do something with biology? Because if I'm working and I'm creating caviar or doing something with fish roe, and while I'm gutting the fish, I'm looking at all the parts of their bodies. And so I could do something around ichthyology or whatever, and I could take it to another level. But so I could incorporate all these things. And so it kind of becomes more of a living project-based learning.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of areas you could get.
Mm-hmm.
For almost any job.
You were talking about just doing this. We can incorporate life into learning. It's like, no. We need to include this learning thing into our lives and teach this how to learn thing. I think that the kids sort of overlook mm-hmm. that, the fact that as they're going through this day that they have, they're learning quite a bit. They're doing quite a few things that are extraordinarily wonderful. They just don't understand it because it's not being graded. It doesn't count because it's not in school. It's like, yeah.
So therefore it shouldn't be, it's not valuable if it doesn't have a letter grade on it.
Exactly.
Right? Like that's been eaten into our kids.
Exactly. It's not being evaluated by an adult or for a letter grade or credit. Therefore it's not valuable. And that's not accurate. Life is what this is about. This artificial thing we do for 12 years. This is weird.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting thing. And I got this. This is from Nikhil Goyal from his book, One Size Does Not Fit All.
Oh, yes. That book is great.
I believe that this was a study done around 2005. And he says a group of students between 3 and 5 years old were given a divergent thinking test. The results were mind-blowing. 98% of kindergartners were classified as geniuses at divergent thinking. As noted prior, when we combine divergent thinking with convergent thinking, we can get a sense of creativity. And here comes the calamitous news. After 5 years of formal education, only 50% of children tested at genius level. By age 10, 32% remain, and at age 15, 10% remain. When they tested 200,000 adults, only 2% were considered divergent thinkers.
It's not valuable.
what are we teaching?
To be convergent, to go with, to conform.
Right.
Yeah. So what do we need to teach is exactly what we are teaching out. Because who are the people? And earlier we had the conversation of what is thinking outside the box. Why are we thinking outside the box? That means because everything is in the box. You have all the tools right there in your box. Why aren't you taking them out and manipulating them? So thinking outside the box should be the way things are, rather than pigeonholing yourself and keeping yourself locked in because it's safe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does.
It does to me.
And that's our school system, you know, it's just conformity. And that's the sign of intelligence, right? It's not the outside of the box type thinking. It's IQ tests and, you know, that's how we gauge their intelligence. And then like at high school, do you have a high SAT score? Yay, you're smart. But... Right. Like that's the litmus test. So if you're not a good tester, if you don't do well with retaining stuff for a 4-hour long test, then you are therefore deemed not as smart as others.
Well, here's some interesting evidence too, as of late with the box and what happens inside that box is that the amount of stress that goes on trying to make those grades. There was some testing, Mercer Island, of all places, a very fluent society, and kids in high grades, and the race to have them were going through an immense amount of stress. And this was found out because they were supposed to be the control group for a group that was in an inner city, sort of crime-ridden, ugly place to live. And it turns out that they were sort of a control group in not so great a way. They were also stressed out by this capture of this, you know, the GPA, and they were suffering this. And then when the pandemic hit, the stress levels went way down, like way down. And then when the pandemic started to incorporate all of the same, let's go back to school things, it kind of went back up again. And it was very clear what had occurred there. So, they didn't know too. Wow. Interestingly enough, they're just saying it's sort of a systemic thing. I think I'm not sure how this is affecting me, but it just seemed to come back when it's like, you know, and it's like, kid, you've overvalued this GPA thing to the point where every little test, you know, they were relaying stories of kids crying in the bathroom over a test score and then recouping in time to go to the class to make it look like nothing had happened kind of thing. And
well, I remember in elementary school hearing stories about students in India and in Japan, where if the point of their pencil broke, I think this was for Japan, that they would commit suicide while they were taking a test, because test taking was so intense, and it had to do with your family honor, with how well you did. And of course, this was, and I'm going to say it, I don't know if it's true or not still, but this was back in the late 1960s, so that tells you how old I am. But hopefully in alternative ed the students are a little more relaxed about some of these things, but they're not, because they have, if you think about all the grunge that they have to muck through, they have family issues, they have the problem, personal issues, they may have economic issues, housing issues, they may have just all kinds of stuff going on in their lives. And the nice thing is that we're able to actually connect with them and meet with them and get to know them and hear their stories.
The relationship building.
Exactly, and community building. And Letitia Woodley, who wrote Transforming Alternative Ed, said, and this is the one thing that I think that people don't really get. And if they did, they would toss it off to the side anyway. And so this is one thing that really sticks in my craw that they don't get. But we are, alternative schools and programs are the intensive care units of the education system. If we don't do our due diligence in effectively selecting, preparing, and managing staff to work with that promised students, our death rates, which are our dropout rates, will continue to increase. Can you look at every student on your dropout list and say to the family, we did everything we could to save your child? And if not, why?
Ooh.
Now, there's another book, and it's called, let me see if I can find it here. I was trying to locate it, and it is called An Answer to Disenfranchised Students. And it is by, I'll get to it. I'll put it in the notes. And she says, and she's working with the school system down in Texas, and there is a huge difference in the satisfaction levels of students who graduated from alternative schools and those who graduated from a regular mainstream school. There is far more satisfaction from alternative ed students.
I was going to just ask which one was the...
Well, yeah. Even though there's a shame in it that's put on to them by the elitists, and I'm going to call them out. I'm just going to say that they're hypocrites. That they say students are important. I really care about the students. And yet they snub these kids. And I know that when they hear this, they're going to come to me and say, I am not one of those. Well, guess what? The fact that you took on a grain of sand that's truth in there means that you are one of those. So I'm not, you know, that's something that people need to look at for themselves. But these kids need to be celebrated for their grit. Yeah, and how many of the kids in mainstream actually have that much grit, because we haven't gotten to them yet. And I'm not discounting those students, but I'm just saying that these are the kids who actually want to be at school. They see the need and they go.
Well, there's kind of a freedom to be had in that quote unquote failure that alternative kids have. And by that, I mean, the GPA and the quest for the great GPA is, of course, it's a short-term goal. It's a finite game. You know, the game we know that's played, you know, the cramming for the test, taking the test, and then forgetting the knowledge, you know, right after that game. And they understand that the GPA can reinvent itself. I tell them that, you know, when you get to college after your first term, no one's going to ever say, you know, you went to college. Yeah, what was your GPA in high school? They're going to say, what was your GPA in college? You can reinvent yourself at that point. And then they see the infinite game of life, per se. You know that, oh, I have a second chance and a third chance, and there's a longer journey ahead. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, when you turn 18, that's not like the end zone. You actually have a chance to reinvent yourself. In fact, that's just the very, very, very beginning. And it frees them. That failure, that initial, I'm not a failure. No, actually, that frees you in a lot of ways. You understand something that somebody who's still pushing doesn't yet. Yeah.
And they get to explore, you know, if they're going to either college or a trade or community college or apprenticeship, you know, you just keep telling them, like, at least you're engaged in classes for the most part that you're interested in. And so you're
a crappy job, or, you know,
crappy job. Or, well, maybe,
you know, I went to Europe right out of high school for 6 months. I landed in Heathrow Airport, pulled a backpack out of a box, attached this sleeping bag to it, stepped out of the airport and stuck my thumb out. The rest of it, I didn't have a plan for, really.
Wow.
Wow. That is a...
Yeah, I wouldn't let my kid do it at the age of 17 now, but my parents let me do it. I don't know why. Did they have insurance? They did.
Did they have insurance on you?
They did. That was probably it. Yeah. But I lived. I was out there for six months.
Sharon DeLoach is the one who wrote the Answer to Disenfranchised Students. But so... What, coming back full circle to our question, what do you want to tell people about alternative ed that you think that they get wrong? Let's wrap it up here in about
3 minutes. It's such a, there's so many things, right? I think the biggest thing is just to be seen as an equal. an equal program, an equal path for all students, not just this little clump of students that you either have an idea about or a bias about, but it is a parallel educational program. And in some ways, it's even superior to what we call mainstream education. That would be the biggest takeaway. It's not the, like you said, the dumping ground. It's not for the people who can't hack it. It's not for the less than. It's an equal to program.
Yeah. Yeah. Philip?
I can almost assure you that your child would do better in an alternative program.
Mm-hmm. And that's not because it's simpler.
No. I mean, better all around. Socially, academically, they'd be better prepared as a human for multitudes of different reasons. But yeah, the mainstream school system is ill-equipped to prepare kids to be better adults. It's ill-equipped to do it.
Yeah. I think what I would say is that the trained alternative ed teachers, and there is no formal training anywhere. I heard about some in New Jersey, but there is nothing at the university level at this time that I can find, nothing at the state level that mandates or that provides for alternative ed teachers so that they can learn and do what they do. We do it for elementary schools because basically we are elementary school teachers because we're asked to teach almost every single subject under the sun.
Right.
And understand it. And so our learning never stops. We're constantly involving ourselves. And that's one thing that's incredibly important for anybody who wants to go into alternative ed. You can't shy away from learning. You've got to do it. But not only are we more skilled that way, we're more skilled in brain flexibility and plasticity. We are more skilled in dealing with the whole child.
Right. Yes.
And we expect more out of our students, and it may seem easier, but that's because we find methods to help our students so that they can achieve what they need on their level, and it's consensual, and we're not fighting them. We're working with them and mentoring them.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's like all three of our statements.
Exactly. I think that's why I love having you guys here, is because I think the three of us kind of converge. We're still missing some components, I think. But you know, that's
probably a work in progress. Yeah. That's where learning comes in. Yeah.
You don't think that we could be the triad of alt ed?
With the all-knowing triad, we know all of it. Write down this is wisdom. This is wisdom.
And so, yeah, so that's basically what we're going to be doing here is talking and learning and discovering. And so if you, our listener, are interested, please subscribe and give us feedback because we're always open for more. So I'm going to say goodbye to Philip. Goodbye, Christy.
Goodbye.
And we will be back with another episode soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.